Do we have anything we want to start with? Any notes? Any announcements? Any?
I don't know. I mean, it's welcome to season two.
Welcome to season two, guys. I should have gotten something. Dang it. I have cookies. There's some cookies there. If you want some cookies.
I might snack on some cookies.
Well, welcome to season two. Sorry it feels kind of like a lackluster intro to the new season.
It's not, we don't feel lackluster about it. We're very excited.
We're just kind of stoned, if you can't tell. Who is hissing a bunch?
I don't know.
I keep hearing it. Yeah, welcome to season two. We're definitely really excited about starting back up. I'm really excited about it anyway.
I'm really excited.
I think it's going to be really fun.
I'm excited to do more of the things that we didn't get to do the first season.
Like what?
Like spooky stuff. Ooh. And conspiracy theories.
Is yours going to be spooky today?
A little.
Mayhaps.
Not terribly, but just, you know, a little.
Just a wee bit. I don't know. I don't think we have any other announcements other than welcome to season two.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Let's see. In our season break, I worked a lot. I started roller skating a lot.
Hell yeah.
That's been really fun. Been getting better at that. My skates fucking suck, though.
Maybe Santa will get you some new ones.
I'm really hoping so. But we'll see. Other than that, I think that's kind of been it. What about you?
Also been working a lot, and when I'm not working, I'm cleaning. But, you know, I've been...
The life of an adult.
Been reading some books. I've been pole dancing. I'm real into that. That's where
Fun,
I came from today.
Sexy.
Yep. I wear my little bloomers, my little pantaloons.
Cute. Slaying. I think we're just going to jump right in.
Okay.
I'm going to jump right in anyway. Yeah, nothing's really changed this season. So, I guess just enjoy and get ready for the weird and the strange.
Raina wouldn't give me any hints.
No, because I wanted to surprise you. Because if you listened to last week's episode, Sabrina asked a question. What is...
the sexiest?
No.
Not that question?
Not that question.
Okay, never mind.
What is a horror movie trope that, like, really gets to you? Mm. And you said aliens. So I thought I would surprise you.
Thank you.
I thought I would surprise you with an alien story.
I love that. X-File me, please.
So this is probably one of the more popular ones. If you've heard it already, sorry. But also I'm not. So
also, can I just say, dream threesome, Gillian Anderson, David Duchovny, as they were in the 90s.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know who either of those people
what?
Are.
Mulder and Scully from the X-Files.
Oh, okay. See, if you would have said that, I would have known that. I don't know names of, like, actors and stuff. I'm really bad at it. Hold on. I want to take another hit of this.
Oh, yeah. Please do. I'd also like to point out that we're at Raina's house tonight, and Raina found this beautiful orange crystal glass dish thing that we're using as an ashtray.
Dude, it's so pretty. It almost looks like maybe it's like a candy dish or like a
yeah,
trinket bowl, maybe
something like that.
It's risen, so it's not like gonna get lost on the table, because that's an issue I've always had with ashtrays, is they just kind of get lost on the table when you have a bunch of stuff up there.
That's a good point.
So
it's kind of like a bowl that everyone would put their keys into at a swinger party.
Ooh, whoa.
Maybe. I don't know.
You went there. So yeah, today I'm going to be covering, ooh, aliens.
Ooh.
Maybe I'll add in like a, I'm getting real fun with sound effects now. Maybe I'll add in like a little UFO sound.
I love that.
So today I'm going to be covering the abduction of Travis Walton.
Ooh, right off the bat, I don't know the name.
Yay.
So so I'm excited for this you one's to tell
pretty me interesting
story.
It's pretty crazy. So I'm gonna show you a picture,
okay,
of him, and I want you to tell me who he looks like to you.
Oh,
but
God.
I can't let go of the phone because it's gonna show you
okay
the cartoon. Can you get off of me? Bob Barker is trying to get in my lap. Is there any particular cartoon character that maybe comes to mind?
There is, and I'm struggling to put, like, a name to the face.
Was it, like, a 90s cartoon?
Doug?
No.
No?
I could see that a little bit, though.
So Johnny Bravo.
No. I thought he shared a striking resemblance to Nigel Thornberry.
Okay. I see it now.
I don't know. For some reason, when I saw him, that's just immediately what I thought of. They just look so alike. Here's the side-by-side comparison.
Show me again. Okay. I definitely see it. It's the, like, bushy orange mustache.
Yeah, it just...
The eyes that are too far apart.
Big nose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're very similar.
I'm not gonna lie, he's kind of hot.
Oh, Sabrina.
I'm a sucker for a mustache.
God. Anyway, so I'm gonna be talking about his abduction today. I don't know why I made this so goddamn small. I don't feel like fixing it. So
abduct me, daddy.
God damn it, Sabrina. I'm gonna spray you with a water bottle. No.
You are not allowed to be horny. No horny. On,
on November 5th, 1975, while working with a logging crew in the Apache Sitgraves National Forest, Sitgraves? I don't know how to say it.
Huh?
Sitgraves, I don't know, the Apache National Forest place. I don't know how to say that part of the name. Travis Walton just randomly disappeared one day.
Ooh.
Or not one day, but on November 5th, 1975. So, he reappeared after a 5-day search, which was interesting because it was 5 days, which is not usually very, it's not very long for somebody to go missing.
Yeah.
He's employed by Mike Rogers, who had for 9 years contracted with the United States Forest Service for various duties. So this man, Mike, was on contract for doing various things in the National Forest, and he was employed by him, so he was out doing those things in the National Forests.
Okay.
Mike and Travis were best friends, and Travis dated Mike's sister, Dana, whom he ended up later marrying.
Dana, as in Scully?
I see where you're trying to go with it, but I don't know. I don't know enough about it to hop on the bandwagon. So, yeah, he ended up marrying his sister. Him as well as other crew members lived in the town of Snowflake, Arizona.
Ooh, what a name.
Yeah, and Mike was hired to thin out scrub brush and undergrowth from more than 1,200 acres near Turkey Springs, Arizona. So the job was the most lucrative contract Rogers had received from the Forest Service, but the job was behind schedule.
Mm.
And as a result, they worked overtime to fulfill the contract.
Day and night, putting
in
the hours.
Yeah, literally, from 6 a.m. till sunset.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so literally putting in the fucking hours. Just after 6 p.m. on November 5th, Mike and his crew finished their work for the day and piled into his truck for the drive back to Snowflake. So the crew reported that shortly after beginning the drive home, they saw a bright light from behind a hill. They drove closer and said they saw a large silvery disc hovering above a clearing and shining brightly. It was around 8 feet high and 20 feet in diameter.
Wow.
Mike stopped the truck and Travis leaped out and ran towards it.
Bro.
The men in the truck reported that Travis was nearly below the object when the disc began making noises similar to a loud turbine. The disc then began to wobble from side to side, and Walton began to cautiously walk away from the object. Just after Walton moved away from the disc, or just after Travis, sorry, I put their last names, but I don't like saying their last names. No. It feels too formal.
Yeah, we want to be up close and personal with them. Yeah,
we're besties here.
We are all besties.
So just after Travis moved away from the disc, the others insisted they saw a beam of blue-green light coming from the disc and strike Travis.
Oh, okay.
Jerome Clark, who's a UFO historian, wrote on the case, and he reported that Travis rose a foot into the air, his arms and legs outstretched, and shot back stiffly some 10 feet. All the while...
Okay, wait. So his arms and legs did what now?
They were outstretched and shot back. So they went out and back. Yeah.
Okay.
Like he was being sucked up
into like he was being possessed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All the while caught in the glow of the light, his right shoulder hit the earth and his body sprawled limply over the ground.
Oh my God.
So it lifted him up and then just dropped him. Yeah. At about 7:30 p.m., they called police from Heber, Arizona? Heber? I don't know. Near Snowflake. I love that name. It's so cute and quirky. And it's Christmas!
I know, and it probably doesn't snow there, like, ever. So, at this point, Travis is still on the ground? Or did he get back in the truck and, like, ride, keep going with them?
So, he's, like, still on the ground. At about 7:30 p.m., they called police, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And Deputy Sheriff Chuck Ellison answered, and it was initially reported only that one of the logging crew members was missing. I guess they got some sort of, like, amnesia almost, or, like, the flash of the light didn't show where he was, like, maybe he was moved or something. I think I get more into it. I can't really, honestly, remember what I wrote down. Okay.
We're discovering it together.
Yeah, it's all... Sorry, guys. So, the deputy then met the crew at a shopping center, and they related to him the story, and all the men were distraught. Two of them were in tears, and... Though he was somewhat skeptical of the fantastic account, the deputy would later reflect that if they were acting, they were awfully good at it.
Damn. So I wonder if any of them pissed their pants.
Ooh, that's a good question. You're asking the correct stuff, dude.
I'm getting down deep, dirty into it.
Ellison, or the deputy, notified his superior.
What?
Superior.
This is raw.
This is me if you even care.
This is who you're being mean to when you're being mean to me.
So he notified his superior, Sheriff Marlon Giuseppe. I fucking love that last name. I think Sheriff it's so fun.
Giuseppe is on the case.
Sheriff Giuseppe here. Oh my God. He told the deputy to keep the crew in Heber until he could arrive with Officer Ken Copeland to interview the men. Copeland? I'm butchering all of this. It's fine.
It's okay. This was all back in the 70s, so they're probably, like, not even alive.
Jesus.
I'm just kidding. I know that.
They're not that old, Sabrina.
That wasn't that long ago.
Hi, Floofy. In less than an hour, Giuseppe and Copeland arrived, and they heard the story from the crew, and, Mike insisted on returning to the scene immediately to search for Travis with tracking dogs if possible. No dogs were available.
Aw.
Wait.
I'm sorry. Did somebody let all the dogs out?
Ooh. Boo. But the police And some of the crew returned to the scene, and some of the crew members were too upset to be of much help in a search.
Wow.
So they elected to return to Snowflake and relay the bad news.
Oh my god. To friends and family.
Yeah. At the scene, the law enforcement officers became suspicious of the story relayed by the crew, mainly because there was nothing in the way of physical evidence to back up the account. Other volunteers and crew members didn't find any sign of Travis. But it would, like, get cold in the mountains, and Travis had only been wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and they were worried that he would be a victim of hypothermia. That, like, smells really weird when it gets to the end of it. That smells really weird when it gets to the end of it.
I thought you were talking to popcorn. I thought you were saying popcorn smelled weird.
She does. She's stinky.
She's so like, damn, stinky. She's not even doing anything.
She's just perpetually... You're clawing me. She's perpetually stinky.
Assigned stinky at birth.
So true. You need a little sweater that says that. Mike and Sheriff Coplin went to tell the news to Travis's mother, Mary Walton Collette, who lived on a small ranch at Bear Creek, which was about 10 miles from Snowflake. Mike told her what had happened, and she asked him to repeat it. She then asked calmly if anyone other than the police and the eyewitnesses had heard the story. Because she was so calm, it raised even more suspicion.
Mm.
So, people like to, like, use in their attempts to, like, debunk the story, but Officer Clark noted that Collette was known as being generally guarded, and she had raised 6 children basically by herself under trying circumstances, which had long since taught her to not fly to pieces in the face of crisis and tragedies.
She's a hardy woman.
Yeah, she's got her shit together. She's not gonna freak out.
Mm-hmm.
He also said in the days ahead, as events overwhelmed her, she would show emotion before friends, acquaintances, and strangers alike, a fact that would go unmentioned in debunking treatments of the story. After the police came at about 3 a.m., Travis's mother called Duane Walton, her second oldest child. And on November 6th, officials and volunteers had scoured the area around the scene where Travis went missing. No trace of him was discovered, and police suspicions were growing that the story told by the crew was concocted to cover up an accident or homicide.
Ooh.
So Saturday morning, Mike and Walton arrived at Sheriff Giuseppe's office, explosively angry because they had returned to the scene and found no police there.
They're like,
they surprised?
Yeah, we looked.
We tried, guys.
Bestie, we went home.
By that afternoon, police were searching for Travis with helicopters, horse-mounted officers, and jeeps. By Saturday, a word of Travis's disappearance had spread internationally. Jesus. News reporters, ufologists, and the curious began traveling to Snowflake. Among these was a man named Fred Silvanus, a Phoenix UFO investigator who interviewed Travis and Duane Walton on Saturday. Or not Travis, Mike and Duane Walton on Saturday, November 8th. On the recording made by Silvanus, Mike noted that because of Walton's disappearance and the subsequent search, he would be unable to complete his contract with the Forest Service, and he hoped the search for his missing friend would mitigate the situation.
Mm.
Duane Walton, who's Travis's brother, reported Travis and himself were quite interested in UFOs. In fact, 12 years earlier, Duane had witnessed a UFO similar to the one witnessed by the logging crew.
Really?
Apparently.
What a coinkydink.
So, Duane reported that he and Walton had both decided that if they had a chance, they would get as close as possible to any UFO they see, which explains why he jumped out of the car.
Ah.
So, Duane also suggested that Travis would not be injured by the aliens because they don't harm people. Is what he said. Shortly after the Silvanus interview, Snowflake Town Marshal Sanford Flake.
That's not real. There's no way that's real.
I keep finding all these fake names.
Please call me Flake. Frosted was my father.
Mr. Flake. Oh my god, have you seen that fucking that old video where it's a bunch of outtakes for a commercial of these two old people eating a pot pie?
No.
And the old man keeps trying to say buttery flaky crust. And they do like 30 takes and he just keeps fucking he just keeps fucking up the buttery flaky crust. Yeah. Like he's like in a flakery butter in the in anyway. So, Snowflake Town Marshal Sanford Flake announced that the entire affair was a prank engineered by Duane and Travis.
Uh-huh.
They had fooled the logging crew by lighting a balloon and releasing it at the appropriate time.
From where?
Flake's wife disagreed. Mrs. Flake disagreed. Suggesting that her husband's story was just as far-fetched as Duane Walton's. Period. Get him.
We love a believer.
Police officers were making repeated visits to Colette's home, and Duane once returned there to find her in tears as she was being questioned in her living room. Duane told the police to leave unless they had something new to relay or ask. Duane suggested that she speak with police only on the front porch, which would allow her to end the interview anytime she chooses by simply going inside. Duane also spoke with William H. Spalding of Ground Saucer Watch. Don't know what that is. Spalding suggested that if Walton ever returned, GSW could provide a doctor to examine him in confidence.
What does that mean? Like a secret doctor?
Yeah, so they can see if he has any probing markings and stuff like that. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, so Spalding also suggested that if Walton returned, he should save his first urination after returning so it could be tested.
These are a lot of what ifs.
On Monday, November 10th, all of Mike's remaining crew took polygraphs given by the Arizona Department of Public Safety, which we now know. Is polygraphs are bullshit, so...
Right, very unreliable.
Yeah. The questions asked if any of the men caused harm to Travis, or knew who had caused Travis harm, if they knew where his body was buried, and if they told the truth about seeing a UFO. The men all denied harming Travis, or knowing who had harmed him, denied knowing where his body was, and insisted they had indeed seen a UFO. The test concluded that all men were truthful.
Wow.
Clark quotes from the official report, quote, "These polygraph examinations prove that these five men did see some object they believed to be a UFO, and that Travis Walton was not injured or murdered by any of these men on that Wednesday." So following the polygraph tests, Sheriff Giuseppe announced that he accepted the UFO story, saying there's no doubt they're telling the truth.
Okay, so we love a man who can accept when they're wrong.
Yeah, we love a man who can... like, take accountability for just being dumb.
Yeah.
So basically, out of nowhere pops Travis. And without having notified authorities of Travis's return, Duane drove him to Phoenix, Arizona, late Tuesday morning, where they were to meet with Dr. Lester Stewart.
Oh, so he was like, police be damned, we're getting to that secret doctor to see if you've been probed.
The Waltons reported that they were disappointed to learn that Stewart was not a medical doctor, as Spalding had promised, but a hypnotherapist.
Oh my god.
So
the hypnotherapist is gonna look in his booty hole?
I think he's just gonna hypnotize him to just tell the story. Spalding and Stewart would later report that the Waltons had stayed with them for over 2 hours, while the Waltons insist they were at Stewart's office for at most 45 minutes. So...
a lot of conflicting stories here.
Yeah, most of which was occupied with trying to determine the nature of Stewart's qualifications. So, these two are saying, dude, they came and they were there for like 2 hours. And these guys are saying, no, we fucking went there. And for like... 30 minutes we were talking about how you were not qualified to do this. And then 15 minutes of other conversation, and then we left. Like, after this news broke about Travis's return, Spalding tried to call them, and Duane basically forbid him from calling again.
Whoa.
Clark writes that after his telephone call, quote, Spalding became a sworn enemy in the case, unquote. Oh my God. It's getting serious. The medical examination revealed that Travis was essentially in good health, but they did note two unusual features.
Ooh, let me guess. Needle marks.
So, he had a small red spot at the crease of his right elbow that was consistent with a hypodermic injection.
Called it. Classic abduction.
But classic. But the doctors also noted that the spot was not near a vein. Analysis of Travis's urine revealed a lack of ketones, and this was unusual given that if Travis had indeed been gone for 5 days with little or no food, as he insisted, and as his weight loss suggested, his body should have begun breaking down fats in order to survive, and this should have led to very high levels of ketone in his urine. Walton, or Travis would later speculate that he had gotten the mark on his elbow in the course of his logging work. Critics would speculate that the mark showed where Travis or someone else had injected drugs into his system. Officers dismissed the possibility of drugging as most unlikely, given that the medical doctors found no sign of it. But he also notes, or they also note that perhaps it's more difficult to explain. What's more difficult to explain is the absence of bruises, which one might expect in the wake of Travis's alleged beam-driven collision with the ground, that he would have bruises. Now, Travis's account on the UFO abduction... Oh. Sorry, I read that with the wrong tone of voice. So now I'm going to move on to the accounts that Travis had of his UFO abduction.
Oh, yeah. Tell us more.
So Travis reported that after approaching the UFO... after approaching the UFO near the work site, the last thing he remembered was being struck by the beam of light. And when he woke up, he said that he was on a reclined bed. A bright light shone above him, and the air was heavy and wet.
Gross.
He was in pain and had some trouble breathing, but his first thought was that he was in a normal hospital.
Interesting.
So Travis says he realized he was surrounded by three figures, each wearing a sort of orange jumpsuit. And the figures were not human. And he described the beings as typical of the so-called grays, which feature in some abduction accounts. Shorter than 5 feet, and they had bald heads, no hair. Their heads were domed, large. They looked like fetuses. They had large eyes. Almost all brown.
What does they look like fetuses mean?
I guess, like, I don't know, like the shape babies are before they come out.
Like rounded?
I guess like big head, small body.
Okay.
Kind of thing. And like kind of disproportionate and like maybe wet.
Ew. That's the most unattractive description.
I feel like it's true, though.
Yeah, no, it totally is.
Let's see. He said that the creepiest thing about them were the eyes. They just stared through me. Their ears, noses, and mouths seemed real small, maybe just because their eyes were so huge. And he feared for his safety and got to his feet and shouted at the creatures to stay away. He grabbed a glass-like cylinder from a nearby shelf and tried to break its tip to create a makeshift knife, but found the object unbreakable.
Whoa.
So instead, he waved it at the creatures as a weapon, and the trio of creatures left him in the room. Travis then left what he called the exam room through a hallway, which led to a spherical room with only a high-backed chair placed in the center of the room.
Creepy.
Though he was afraid there might be someone seated in the chair, he says he walked towards it, and as he did, the lights began to appear in the room. The chair was empty, so he says he sat in it, and when he did, the room was filled with lights, similar to stars projected on a round planetarium ceiling. The chair was equipped on the left arm with a single short thick lever with an oddly shaped molded handle atop some dark brown material. On the right arm, there was an illuminated lime green screen about 5 inches square with black lines intersected at all angles.
Ooh.
When Travis pushed the lever, he reported that the stars rotated around him slowly, and when he released the lever, the stars remained at their new position. He decided to stop manipulating the lever since he had no idea what it might do. So, Travis thought he had seen a rectangular outline on the rounded wall, perhaps a door, and went to look for it. Travis heard a sound behind him. He turned expecting more of the short, large-eyed creatures, but was pleasantly surprised to see a tall human figure wearing blue coveralls with a glassy helmet. At the time, Travis said he did not realize how odd the man's eyes were, larger than normal and a bright gold color.
Oh, so what you're telling me is that that man was a Cullen.
Was a Cullen.
I know what you are.
Say it. Say it out loud.
You're a half alien hybrid that's just abducted me and you're wearing coveralls.
And a shiny helmet. Travis says he then asked the man a number of questions, but the man only grinned and motioned for him to follow him.
Ew.
Yeah, I don't like that. Travis also said that because of the man's helmet, he might have been unable to hear him. So he followed the man down a hallway, which led to a door and a steep ramp down to a large room. Travis described it was similar to an aircraft hangar. Travis says he realized he had just left a disc-shaped craft similar to the one he had seen in the forest just before he had been struck by the bluish light, but the craft was perhaps twice as large. In the hangar-like room, Travis reported seeing other disc-shaped crafts, and the man led him to another room containing 3 more humans, a woman and 2 men, resembling the helmet man.
Ooh.
These people did not wear helmets, so Travis says he began asking questions of them. They responded with the same dull grin and led him by his arm to a small table. Once he was seated on the table, Travis says he realized the woman held a device like an oxygen mask, which she placed on his face. Before he could fight back, Travis says he passed out. When he woke up again, Travis says he was outside the gas station in Heber, Arizona. One of the disc-shaped craft was hovering just above the highway. After a moment, the craft shut away, and Travis stumbled to the telephones and called his brother-in-law. Which, I don't know why that would be the first person he would call. Which was not Dwayne, his brother. He called his brother-in-law. Mike. No, it's actually Grant Neff.
Wait, what? Okay, I'm confused now. So he was married.
Mike is his best friend.
Right, but didn't he say he married Mike's sister?
Yes, but I'm sure he had a brother, too.
Okay. So they're all brothers around here?
We're all part of the same family. He thought only a few hours had passed, and after hearing Travis's story, Giuseppe speculated that Walton may have been hit in the head and drugged, then taken to a normal hospital, where he had a routine exam. And, like, he thought maybe he was just hallucinating because he hit his head or something.
Well, I mean, the hospital doesn't normally, like, discharge people and then, like, drop them off at a gas station in the middle of nowhere.
That's true. That's true. Travis dismissed this, noting that the medical examination had found no trace of head trauma or drugs in his system. In 1978, Travis published The Walton Experience, in which he outlined his own narrative of the event and its aftermath. The same year, Bill Berry published The Ultimate Encounter, in which he argues that the various debunkers did not make persuasive cases, and that Travis and others alleging similar experiences relating to events more or less as they believed they had happened. In 1993, Travis's book was adapted into a film, Fire in the Sky. I've seen it. It's really boring. It's not that good. The National Enquirer awarded Travis and his co-workers a $5,000 prize for best UFO case of the year.
Very cool.
I didn't know that was a thing. I'm cheating. This is an old story that I covered in my old podcast from a few years ago. So at that time, he was 65. He's probably 72 now, maybe 70, 72, somewhere between there. And there's not really updates or reports of him doing anything now, so.
Aww.
I don't know what he's up to.
What you up to, Travis? Are you still sexy?
Are you still sexy? Yeah, you want to see if this 70-year-old man is still hot?
Oh, man. I love a good classic abduction.
It's so good.
That one was very strange.
Yeah, super strange. And we never really got answers. We don't really know what's true and what's not.
The truth is out there.
It definitely is. Well, you know, I want to believe.
You know, one of the X-Files, I guess, like, overarching themes, or I guess motifs, is that these, like, classic abduction cases, like, are they real aliens or are they government distractions from other things?
I could definitely see it being that, honestly.
Who knows?
I could definitely get behind that. That definitely sounds like something our government would do.
Or, third option, they were vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Working with aliens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just never know.
I guess it's true. You really don't. I guess we're both getting into stuff kind of strange today. Do you want to take a little break and then we'll get into your strangeness?
We'll re-up.
We'll re-up.
Period. Sounds good. Period.
What's up, Ryan?
I'm going to read this to everybody. So Sabrina noticed my couch is lined with Squishmallows. If you've seen our Instagram page, you've seen a picture of it. We don't support Squishmallows anymore.
But we already have a lot of them.
Yeah, we already have them. Sabrina noticed that one of my Squishmallows is wearing glasses just like hers. So I'm going to read you guys who it is. So it's Ryan.
And got the red heart-shaped glasses.
Ryan is not your average husky. While he enjoys playing sports and spending time with friends, he also loves to spend time learning about robots and technology. One day, he hopes to be a famous inventor, so watch out.
That's cute. I hate when they're, like, weird shaped and you, like, can't tell what it is, and then you read the little card and it does not give you any context clues, and I'm like, what the fuck? Well, would you like to hear my spooky, scary story?
Of course I would.
Well, it's not really, like, scary.
Yeah.
But it is a little ooky spooky.
Ooky spooky.
So, I'm bringing it back home to the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh, boy.
Have you ever heard of the Moon-Eyed People?
No.
Ooh. So, North Carolina has, like, a few cryptids, mm-hmm. I think. Well, you know, I wasn't really sure what to categorize this as.
Mm-hmm.
Cryptid, or we could call it, like, a lost civilization.
Oh.
Which, you know, most famously, there's Roanoke, but less famously, here in the mountains, there's the Moon-Eyed People.
Whoa.
And this comes from certain indigenous legends, mostly Cherokee and Creek Native Americans, particularly in Cherokee Moor. And it's said that when the Cherokee people settled in the southern Appalachian Mountains, they told tales of people who were already living there.
Hmm.
These people were supposedly cave dwellers who were short, stocky, very, very pale, large, big blue eyes, whoa, and, like, flaxen hair and beards, and were nocturnal.
What?
Yeah. So those, perchance, may be the original dwellers of the Appalachian Mountains.
What the fuck?
They were said to only come out at night because their skin and eyes were too sensitive for daylight, which is how they came to be called Moon-Eyed.
What?
And this is why I think they look like bean. Or, I mean, popcorn.
Oh, my God. Poops, what are you?
Tales of the Moon-Eyed People have been told in Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee. And these tales predate Europeans arriving in North America by hundreds of years.
Of course.
I read that the Cherokee people, like, came to settle because, you know, people were nomadic prior, that they came to, like, actually settle in the mountains around 1100 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were already there. Like, that's at least 400 years.
Damn. It's a long time. And they were just living in caves the whole time?
Yeah.
God damn.
There are stone structures that are said to be attributed to the Moon-Eyed people. One of them is in Fort Mountain State Park in Georgia. It's actually named Fort Mountain because of the stone structure. It's been reinforced with man-made additions, but it is 850 feet long and varies from 2 to 6 feet tall and sits at the top of the ridge.
Hmm.
It's thought to have been constructed between 400 and 500 AD.
Damn.
So, a very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
There have also been effigies that have been found depicting these strange little people.
What the fuck?
Like stone carvings.
What?
Native legends say the Moon-Eyed people were driven out of their land, either deeper into the mountains or further underground, by both the Creek Native Americans in Georgia and Cherokee Native Americans in Tennessee, North Carolina. These people were supposedly driven from their homeland during a very bright full moon when they were at a physical disadvantage due to their eyesight. That's a great question. But, well, they were at a disadvantage because of the full moon, because it was too bright.
Well, no, maybe they were at a disadvantage because of the full moon because they were actually wolves and they didn't want people to know.
But I feel like if they were wolves, they would have, like, destroyed them.
Maybe they were just really good wolves.
Hmm. Okay, that's theory one.
I'm just throwing shit, seeing if it sticks.
But these were, like, very, like, purposeful, like, planned attacks for when the full moon would be its brightest.
Hmm.
So who were they? We've got theory number one from Raina that they're werewolves.
Or maybe they're vampires.
Aliens, vampires, or cryptids.
Twilight, but extraterrestrial.
Twilight / X-Files. They're all fucking at the airport Chili's. Some people will get that. Some people won't.
They're all fucking.
Do you know about the airport Chili's? Have I told you about that before?
No.
Oh my god. So, like, one of the most infamous pieces of fan fiction to exist on the internet is this X-Files fanfic where Scully and Mulder fuck at an airport Chili's at, like, 2 a.m. And it is so funny. I've read it multiple times.
My boss reads a lot of Harry Potter fanfiction. She told me, she's like, yeah, I don't usually listen to music while I tattoo. And I was like, oh, what do you listen to? She's like, audiobooks. I was like, oh, cool, what do you listen to?
That's what she's listening
yeah,
to?
Yeah, she listens to fanfics.
In public, not giving a fuck. That's hilarious. Anyways, because of their pale skin, maybe they are vampires. Because of their pale skin, there's speculation that they could have been descendants of Welsh settlers who followed Prince Madoc, and there's a very long, very Welsh name after that, but I'm just going to go with Prince Madoc.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, of Wales. He sailed across the Atlantic with his brother and landed in Mobile, Alabama in 1170. During a civil war in Wales, supposedly.
Supposedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly. With, like, 10 settlers. And they kind of, like, went up and down the coast. Or up and down the southern, southeast, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Before deciding to land in the Appalachians.
Mm-hmm.
And or in that area, ish. And once they decided on that, he went back to Wales and got like 3 more ships full of people to return and like meet back up. And then they just like weren't heard from.
Oh,
from Wales ever again.
Did they just ditch him or did they just disappear?
Well, they were like, fuck you guys, bye, we're going to America. And, like, came to America.
Oh, okay.
But there have been accounts of what people called, or of what were called at the time, Welsh Indians.
Okay.
So, starting in, like, the 1700s, there started becoming, like, stories of you started hearing stories of these Welsh Indians.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, like, light-skinned groups of native people who spoke perfect Welsh.
Mm.
But it's not really, like, none of that has kind of been authenticated. And, I mean, I read some theories that was, like, that was just propaganda that, like, they wanted...
America doesn't do that.
Right? That they wanted to, like, tell stories of, like, civilized natives... Like, civilized savages. Oh, these Welsh ones.
Savages. Oh, my God.
But
what does Welsh sound like?
Oh, a lot of vowels. Or, I mean, I'm sorry, a lot of consonants. Not a lot of vowels. Mae'r system sydd angen ar hyn o bryd ar gyfer creu
cyfreithiau newydd sy'n effeithio ar Gymru'n unig. Definitely sounds like a white language.
Yeah. If you see it, like, written, it's really bizarre.
Interesting.
Like, very, very long words with, like, all consonants and, like, maybe 2 vowels.
Interesting.
So, like, the king of this story does exist in Wales, but, like, there's no proof that he had a son by that name.
Oh.
And so, like, is this the truth? I don't know.
I guess they didn't really have birth records back then.
Yeah, but true. But if these people did come to Mobile, Alabama in 1170, that's still much later than the stone formation was built, because that was built between 400 and 500.
Hmm.
And that's also approximately the time that the Cherokees settled there, and they said those people were already there.
Interesting.
So to me, that one's not very likely that they could be, like, descendants of these people, because mm-hmm. timeline-wise, it just doesn't really add up.
Yeah.
Another theory is that it could have become, like, where one person has a genetic mutation, like albinism, and then because the group is so isolated from other groups... that it just reproduces mm-hmm. really quickly until everybody kind of has that same condition.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something like that. But, I mean, I don't know if
albinism?
It's... Albinism? I don't know if it's albinism, because there's no O when you add it. Yeah, is it albinism?
I think so.
I don't particularly know. But that wouldn't make you short.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
But if they're reproducing within, well, I guess if it depends on how long they were there. Because if they're reproducing within the same bloodline, then it could cause birth defects to where their eyes are bigger and they're short and they're stocky, you know, kind of thing. So it could just be years of generational reproduction to where they all are just inbred now.
Yeah, that maybe they did live above ground normally mm-hmm. and then... were forced underground because of how severe those defects were. The theory that I find most likely
mm-hmm.
Is that possibly they were an early form of hominids.
What is that?
So, like, humans as we are now are mm-hmm. Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
Before Homo sapiens kind of branched off the evolutionary tree.
Yeah.
There were other forms of early humans that weren't quite humans yet. And they tend to, when you're in a similar area, they tend to develop similar traits because, you know, you evolve to be best suited to your environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's kind of like nitpicky survival of the fittest. And then that's how Homo sapiens became the prominent or the only
go us
hominid species, because like we were around at the same time as Neanderthals. Some people still have Neanderthal DNA, but Homo sapiens were better suited to their environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think it's possible that this is an early form of hominid that was in North America that early.
Cool.
But then, you know, once met by Homo sapiens, like the indigenous people, the Cherokee and the Cheat nations,
mm-hmm.
they, you know, couldn't survive.
Yeah.
And were forced out.
Mm.
Although some people believe that they are still underground in the Appalachian Mountains.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Have people, like, seen them? Or do they say that they see them?
Not really. I mean, I didn't read anything like that mm-hmm. people said they did. But if they're underground, I mean, yeah, there's so many miles of cave. I mean, think of Kentucky,
yeah.
Tennessee. Like, there's so many miles of caves that are unexplored.
Dang.
Do you want to see one of the stone things that show what they looked like?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry. Ew. Interesting. They look like little kids.
Yeah.
Huh. That's very interesting.
Isn't it?
Hi, Poops, sorry.
And it's interesting that it's... And the Cherokee said, like, you know, they have a lot of supernatural legends, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said, like, no, these were not other beings. Like, these were also humans. They just look different than us.
Yeah. Huh. I wonder if it was just a family of dwarfism.
I mean, it could be. But if it was... That's a very, like, large area.
Yeah.
You know? Because there were also the ones up in the mountain, or, like, up in Georgia.
So, do they think that there were, like, multiple colonies of them? Or do they think that they just traveled?
That's a good question.
Like, because, are there, like, multiple groups of them that live underground? Or was it just one group that was traveling around?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Because, like, both the Cherokee and the Cheek, like, legends about them are kind of, like, very similar about mm-hmm. how they drove them out.
Hmm.
So maybe it is the same story that's yeah. kind of just been, like, passed around.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I've never heard of that cryptid or that, like, urban legend type thing.
Yeah.
Interesting. We're getting weird this season, guys. What do you think?
So maybe for a little bonus episode, we'll go deep into the Appalachian woods late at night no. into a cave.
No, we will not be doing that. No, thank you.
Just kidding.
I don't want to get eaten by mountain lions or coyotes or bears or something.
Hey there, ghosts. It's me, your boy.
Back for another great sesh.
Without meaning to, we've made a very Twilight coded episode. Welcome to season 2, bitches.
Welcome. Buckle the fuck in. I think it's just gonna get crazier from here. We're just gonna become more unhinged as the year comes to an end, actually. Yeah. I think so. We're just gonna let it all go before the new year. You're gonna see our true colors come through.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Well, should we get out the tarot cards?
We should. We shall.
Shall we? I think we should do, like, a holiday forecast.
Ooh, that would be nice.
Yeah, like, how's your holidays gonna be?
Mm-hmm. Should we do one for each other or just a collective?
We could do all three.
That's true.
Or whatever your heart desires, really. You pick.
I know. I really want to know mine. How my holidays are gonna go.
Yeah.
I think I want to see if I should expect any surprises. Okay, so I'm going to start shuffling them up.
Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle.
I'll pull three.
Okay.
I'm just going to go right off the top. First one I pulled is the King of Pentacles.
Ah, well, I know that one off the top of my head.
Period.
The King of Pentacles is about financial stability.
Slay.
material objects and being responsible with them.
Okay. I have a feeling that is about me not blowing my money this Christmas to get people stuff. I think I get it. The next one I pulled was Queen of Cups.
Compassionate, caring, emotionally stable, intuitive, in flow.
Yay.
That's a good card.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear. I think this is probably going to be my most... Ooh, I don't want to jinx it. I think this might be my most mentally stable Christmas.
Good. It's about being in flow with the energies around you.
Cool. I think I can do that.
Trust your intuition.
Two of Cups was the last one I pulled.
And let's see her. Unified love, partnership, mutual attraction.
Cute.
You're gonna have a really good Christmas.
Yay. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was already excited. Because, again, I think this is probably going to be my most mentally stable Christmas. I'm not using drugs anymore.
Amen.
Slay. I'm very not drinking slay. As much.
Slay. I'm very proud of you. I will read the last sentence of this. In some cases, the Two of Cups can refer to a marriage proposal or engagement.
Don't tell me that.
Do you want to hear something cute?
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Mexico, my grandma let me read her tarot cards, which I was very surprised because she's very Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things she asked me is if she was ever going to get married,
aww,
which is a very sweet question because she has been with my grandfather since she was 15 years old. She's Jesus. Never dated another man in her whole life. But my grandpa comes from a country where divorce is not legal.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the Philippines. And before meeting her, he was married. So this entire time, they've never been able to get married.
Oh.
And that means...
So she wants to get married.
I know. And it also means that if something happens to him, his ex-wife or his wife in the Philippines gets all of his benefits. And my grandma would get absolutely nothing.
Oh.
So the wife in the Philippines is doing poorly right now, mm-hmm, which is not something to celebrate.
Yeah.
But it does mean that maybe my grandma can finally get married. And I pulled this card for
yay.
Her.
Oh.
And
that's
she
so cute.
Was very excited.
Oh, my God. Okay. Do you want me to do yours?
Yeah, do mine.
Okay, let me reshuffle. Do you want to shuffle them?
Sure.
The Four of Pentacles. Let's see. Four. Oh.
Are you reading it upright or reversed?
Upright.
Okay.
I guess, because it's facing me, but I can read it reversed if you want.
I don't care.
Oh. I read the description of the image, and I was like, a man?
I don't think so.
So it has both a negative and positive connections to it. On one hand, a card signifies that you have successfully managed to accomplish much of your goals.
Sure have.
Period. And you have managed to attain a significant material wealth in the process.
Sure have.
Period.
In her manager era.
So I'm not even going to say the negative one because that sounds like that's it.
Thank you. Was that the upright one?
No, this is for both. Like, this is for upright also. Oh. However, on the other hand,
lay it on me.
There is a significant chance that you will start valuing things only for their material worth.
No, don't say I'm going to be a capitalist. That's not nice. Stop making that face while you read.
It's just saying, like, you know, you've worked hard to get where you are, and you should enjoy it,
mm-hmm,
but there is an off chance that it could make you greedy, so just be careful.
Fine. Look, I live in a trailer park, okay? I'm not that greedy.
Listen, you don't need to live beyond your means. That's why, like, I've always told people I'm probably never gonna not live in an apartment.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to. I don't need a house. I don't need that much space.
The only reason I want to get out of the trailer park is because of my neighbors.
That's fair. Any, yeah.
And just be out.
Yeah, also your neighbors just like to sit and watch everybody all day, and it's really strange.
Yeah, my racist neighbors just like watch the road.
I should, in the summer, get really tan and then come over to your house.
Oh, yeah.
And they won't be able to tell from, the, like, where they're sitting in the car. They'll just see tan scan and be like,
Mexican.
Uh-oh. Get the cops ready.
Which one should I pull now?
This one.
Okay. The Lovers.
Do you know what that one is off the top of your head?
I mean, yeah. But it's reverse, so I don't know.
In reverse, the Lovers card can signal a time when you're out of sync with those around you, particularly your loved ones. Mm.
I did just have a falling out, or an estrangement, if you will.
You may find your relationships are strained and communication is challenging.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If you feel like you're not only not on the same page with this person, but don't share the same values, you should go back to the reason you have this person in your life. If you love them unconditionally, know this could pass. The best you can do is bring love and compassion to the situation. In other cases, you may realize that you have simply grown apart and it's time to move on.
Well, that is what my therapist said to me today, so. Mm-hmm.
If your relationship continues to be peppered by arguments and a lack of respect for one another, then it could be time to let go. Damn, this shit's reading you to a T right now.
Yeah, it really is. You know, your cards were very nice to you. They're not very nice to me.
They're like, let's show this bitch how it's done.
Yeah. Okay, last one.
The Moon reverse.
Ay, ay, ay. Oh. No, the Moon is upright.
Oh.
I know this one. It's about secrets.
When it comes to finances, the Moon warns against impulsive decisions of investment. Be cautious and gather all necessary information before making financial choices. In your career, the Moon card could suggest uncertainty, miscommunications, or a lack of clarity in your career path. I don't think that applies to you.
Yeah.
In health matters, the Moon card may indicate mental health issues like depression or anxiety.
Thank you, cards. Tell me something. Yeah, my cards are being really mean. Maybe sorry, they just want to read you to Phil. Yeah.
Maybe we should just leave it at that.
Sorry, they just ready for Phil. God, that was so rude of you guys. Okay.
But it's like, the funny thing is, like, it didn't tell me anything I didn't know. Like, it just wanted to, like, put it in my face.
Yeah, just reassure you, like, this is what you're supposed to be doing, by the way. Like,
this is what's happening to you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're feeling hopeful? Stop just that. A reminder.
Stop doing that. Okay, now I'm going to do a collective one. And this one I'm going to shuffle. Oh my god, all right. So there were two that almost, that were, like, backwards in the deck, mm-hmm. and I thought that maybe I just, like, misplaced them, like, all together when I did it, so I put them right side back in the deck, and as I went to go shovel again, they both fell back out, so I think these are supposed to be for this reading, so.
So the first one was the Six of Cups, right?
Yes.
That's a really good holiday card. It's about revisiting the past, childhood memories, innocence, joy. So that's very sweet.
The next one is Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune is a great card. It's the last card in the major arcana, I think. Which means completion of the cycle.
It is almost the new year.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, karma, life cycles, destiny, turning points.
Yay.
Very good card.
And then the Six of Pentacles.
Let's see here. I'm almost certain that's going to be about having material wealth. Giving, receiving, sharing wealth, generosity, charity. Wow, even you guys have a really nice holiday reading. That's so cool for you all. For literally everyone except Sabrina.
They didn't say you were going to have a bad time.
Okay, well, they said all of you guys are going to have a really good time.
Well, I'm excited for everybody to have it, what seems like a very good
Christmas.
I'm
excited for all of you.
And this is a collective reading, so this applies to you too.
Okay.
But But yay, it sounds like everybody's going to have a very happy, loving, fruitful Christmas. That's very exciting.
It's also the first night of Hanukkah tonight.
Yay, happy Hanukkah, guys. This is going to come out after that, but happy Hanukkah. You're right.
I always forget that part.
But that's okay.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yay. By the time we put it out, it'll still be Hanukkah. So that still applies. Happy Hanukkah.
So, let's see. It is now the third day of Hanukkah. Fourth day? I don't know.
Oh, so it's been Hanukkah.
I'm spitballing. From the time it will come out.
I just got so annoyed. I was like, oh, so it's been Hanukkah. No.
And trying to predict the future.
All right, guys. Well, let's see. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, I think you should stop what you're doing after you finish this episode and go watch Twilight.
Yeah, do that, actually.
Classic Christmas movie.
That's your homework tonight, guys. Go watch Twilight. I was going to end the show. If you guys have any questions, comments, corrections, concerns, suggestions, recommendations, anything like that, you can email us at gwcpodcast@gmail.com. No, Greenwich Cottage Pod.
No, you're right. It is GWC Podcast. And then our Instagram is Greenwich Cottage Pod.
I should just... Actually, you know what? No, because it's kind of fun when I mess up. I was going to say I should just pre-record it and insert it at the end of every episode.
I mean, that would be...
I feel like it would be too boring, though. Yeah, we're exactly. Too real for that.
I mean, you guys don't anyways, so...
That's true. That's so true.
So maybe save your breath, Percy. It's late now. If you're wondering why we're acting like this.
Anyway, if you have any questions, comments, corrections, concerns, suggestions, you can email us at greenwichcottagepod@gmail.com. If you want to see pictures of our cats, hopefully those fucking ghost pictures we took forever ago soon.
And my pink Christmas tree.
And Sabrina's pink Christmas tree. You can follow us at GWC Podcast. And if you want to see my rainbow Christmas tree, you can check out my tattoo page.
Yes, you should. And maybe if you're local, buy a gift certificate.
Ooh, do that. That would be cool. That would be slay. I'm not going to plug it. You guys have to find it.
I'm going to live record when you tattoo me.
We already are going to have the tiny mics because we're going to go do our Christmas dinner after.
Exactly.
Period.
I'll just record my experience as you're doing it.
I love that, actually. Okay. And I'll keep my mic on, too.
Nice.
This will be fun. Okay.
Be really fun. You get to hear me in pain, guys.
All right, guys. Well, I don't know. I guess... I'm really excited for the holidays. I hope you guys are too. Obviously, don't forget everything that's going on in the world.
True.
Just because it's the holidays.
Use all that generosity to help make your world a better place.
Yeah. And keep sharing and liking stuff and being their voice because they still need it because we're still fucking doing this. Yeah. But. Anyway, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Be sure to, like, review it, share it with everybody you know, talk about it with everybody all the time.
And also light up.
And look out.
Good night.
Bye. If you were a dog, what breed do you think you'd be?
Oh, are we doing, like, the Broad City question?
I mean, I don't know if it's...
I'd be a three-legged dog. That's a great question. I mean, it'd have to be, like, a relatively lazy dog. Maybe some sort of hound.
I could see you being, like, a Frenchie.
A Frenchie?
Because you're kind of, like...
a little
but
cunty.
But you're also like, yeah, you're like kind of cunty, but also like sleepy baby.
Oh, that's cute.
Lazy sleepy baby.
Oh,
but also like has a little bit of energy to get a little spicy, but like not super crazy.
What would your dog be?
I feel like it's a cliche answer, but I feel like I would either be a corgi or a pug. Because I'm tiny and I can have a lot of fun and get down and get crazy when I do have fun. But I can also just like chill and hang out and get to know you.
Mm.
I feel like corgis and pugs are both really good at that. They're both really good at like chilling with you.
Yeah.
But they're also really good at like trying to have fun with you.
Okay.
And I love it.
I see that.
I don't know dogs that well though.
I was singing Jack Russell a little.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I ask why?
Like spunky, protective, spunky. Energetic.
Okay.
You know, friendly.
Cute.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jack Russells are cute.